The scars should have ruined her. Instead, they became the only truth no one could silence. Amalia Foster knelt on the cold marble floor of Blackthorn Hall, dressed in the torn remains of her mourning gown, waiting for Duke Franklin Wells to decide whether she would live or hang. The room smelled of wax, snow, and judgment. Outside, winter pressed against the windows like an uninvited guest. Snow fell in silent accusation, covering the gardens where Lord Victor Foster had once walked, praised by every neighbor who mistook good breeding for good character. Inside, candlelight flickered across stone walls that had witnessed 3 centuries of verdicts, most of them swift, all of them final. Amalia did not look at the men gathered to watch her condemnation. She kept her gaze lowered, her hands bound before her, her breathing measured despite the bruises darkening her wrists. 3 days had passed since they found Victor dead in his locked study. 3 days since they pulled her from the room with blood staining her palms and silence coating her tongue. She had not denied it. To the magistrates, that was enough. The great doors opened. Boot heels struck marble in rhythm, precise and unyielding. Amalia did not raise her head. She had learned long ago that men in power preferred women who did not meet their eyes. Duke Franklin Wells entered the sentencing chamber with the authority of a man who had never needed to raise his voice to be obeyed. He was tall, broad-shouldered, dressed in black wool that made him look carved from the same stone as the hall itself. His reputation arrived before him, cold judgment, merciless precision, no tolerance for crime or weakness. He had sentenced murderers, thieves, traitors. He did not hesitate. He did not second guess. He had already signed her execution order that morning. Francis Bowman, the family lawyer, stood near the window, his expression carefully neutral. Edwin Hawkins, the physician who had examined Victor's body, shifted his weight from foot to foot, uncomfortable under the Duke's presence. Lady Rosemary Foster, Victor's mother, sat in the front row draped in black silk in cold satisfaction. To her, this trial was a formality. Amalia's death would restore the family honor Victor had built so carefully. Franklin crossed to the raised platform where the sentencing chair waited. He did not sit. Instead, he studied the papers before him, each page neat and thorough. The investigation had been efficient. Lord Victor Foster, beloved by society, admired in Parliament circles, praised by every aristocrat who benefited from his charm, had been found dead with a blade in his chest. His wife had been the only other person in the locked room. The evidence was damning. The conclusion was obvious. Franklin looked up. "Lady Amalia Foster," he said. His voice filled the chamber without strain, deep and final. "You stand accused of the murder of your husband, Lord Victor Foster. Do you understand the charges?" Amalia did not move. "Answer the Duke," Francis Bowman prompted. His tone clipped. Slowly, she lifted her head. Franklin went still. He had expected defiance, or tears, or perhaps the hollow-eyed madness that sometimes overtook women who committed unthinkable acts. He had not expected this. Amalia Foster looked less afraid of death than of being touched. Her face was pale, her cheekbones sharp beneath skin that had forgotten sunlight. Dark circles shadowed her eyes, but those eyes themselves were not empty. They were exhausted, watchful, resigned. She looked like a woman who had survived something worse than a noose. "I understand," she said quietly. Her voice carried no plea, no desperation, just a hollow acknowledgement, as though she had already accepted every cruelty the world intended to deliver. Franklin's gaze moved over her. The morning gown she wore had once been elegant, black silk with delicate lace at the collar and cuffs. Now it hung torn at the shoulder, the fabric stained and rumpled. Her hair, once carefully pinned, had come loose in dark waves that framed her face. But it was her posture that caught him, despite everything, despite the bindings and the cold and the weight of judgment pressing down. She knelt with her spine straight. She had not broken. Not entirely. "The court has reviewed the evidence," Franklin continued, his tone measured. "You were found alone with your husband. The door was locked from the inside. There were no signs of forced entry, no indication of another assailant, You have offered no explanation, no defense. Amalia said nothing. Do you deny that you killed him? She met his eyes directly for the first time. No. The word fell into the silence like a stone into still water. Lady Rosemary smiled faintly from her seat. Francis Bowman nodded as though confirming something he had known all along. Edwin Hawkins looked away. Franklin's hand moved toward the signed execution order on the desk before him. One signature, one seal. The sentence would be carried out at dawn. But something stopped him. Perhaps it was the way Amalia knelt without trembling. Perhaps it was the absence of guilt in her expression, replaced instead by something that looked disturbingly like relief. Or perhaps it was the way her dress had shifted when she raised her head, exposing the hollow of her throat and the edge of her collarbone. And the bruises there, old ones, faded to yellow and green, not from 3 days ago. Franklin's gaze sharpened. Stand, he ordered. Amalia hesitated, then rose slowly. The effort cost her. He could see it in the way she steadied herself, in the slight wince she tried to hide. When she straightened fully, the torn shoulder of her gown slipped lower. The room went silent. Across her skin were marks no elegant marriage should have left behind, bruises in varying stages of healing, some fresh, some old, a thin scar along her collarbone, white and deliberate, another near her shoulder, barely visible beneath the fabric. Franklin's hand froze over the signed sentence. He had seen violence before. He had sentenced men for it, hanged them for it, watched them die without regret. But this was different. These were not the marks of a single struggle. These were not the wounds of a woman who had turned violent in one mad moment. These were the injuries of someone who had endured. Again, and again, and again. Who examined her? Franklin asked, his voice cutting through the silence. Edwin Hawkins stepped forward reluctantly. I did, Your Grace. And you saw this? The physician's jaw tightened. I examined what was relevant to the investigation. That was not my question. Edwin's gaze dropped. Yes, I saw. And you reported it? Silence. Franklin turned to Francis Bowman. Was this included in the case file? The lawyer straightened. The bruising was noted as evidence of the struggle during Lord Foster's death. All of it? Franklin's tone sharpened. The bruises on her wrists, the scars, the marks that are weeks old. Francis hesitated. The investigation focused on the night in question. Of course it did. Franklin's voice was cold now, controlled, but something dangerous moved beneath it. He looked back at Amalia. She stood perfectly still, her expression unreadable, as though she had learned long ago that showing pain only invited more of it. For the first time in years, Duke Franklin Wells hesitated. He had come to Blackthorn Hall to sentence a murderer. He had signed the papers. He had prepared the words. The case was simple, the evidence clear, the outcome inevitable. But now, looking at the woman before him, at the scars society had chosen not to see, at the bruises the court had dismissed as irrelevant, at the hollow resignation in her eyes, Franklin understood something the magistrates had refused to consider. Amalia Foster had not killed a husband. She had survived one. This sentencing is postponed, he said abruptly. Lady Rosemary stood. Your Grace, the evidence. Will be reviewed, Franklin interrupted. Thoroughly. I will reconvene this court when I am satisfied that justice has been properly examined. But the confession is not enough. He turned to the guards. Lady Foster is to be moved to private quarters under house supervision. She is not to be restrained unless absolutely necessary. Doctor, Helena Cross will be summoned to conduct a full medical examination. Francis Bowman's face darkened. Your Grace, with respect, this is highly irregular. So is sentencing a woman without investigating what happened before the night her husband died? Franklin gathered the papers before him, his movements deliberate. I will not sign an execution order based on half a truth. He looked at Amalia one last time. She stood motionless, confusion flickering across her features for the first time since he had entered the room. She did not understand. She had expected death. She had prepared for it. She had not expected someone to ask why. Franklin turned and walked toward the door, his mind already moving through the questions no one else had thought to ask. As he reached the threshold, he paused without looking back. "What happened to you, Lady Foster?" The chamber was silent. Then, soft and steady, her voice reached him. "Exactly what your court never cared to ask." The words followed Franklin into the corridor like ghosts. Franklin did not sleep that night. He sat in the study he had claimed at Blackthorn Hall, surrounded by case files and medical reports that told only part of the story. The fire burned low in the grate, casting restless shadows across walls lined with books Victor Foster had probably never read. Outside, snow continued to fall, muffling the world in silence. Franklin read every document twice, then a third time. The physician's report was brief, too brief. Edwin Hawkins had noted the cause of death a single stab wound to the chest, fatal within minutes. He had recorded the position of the body, the presence of blood, the absence of other injuries on Victor himself. But the section about Amalia's examination contained only three lines. Subject exhibited signs of recent physical struggle, consistent with the altercation. Minor bruising on wrists and arms. No other findings relevant to the investigation. Franklin set the paper down carefully, though his jaw tightened. He had seen the scars. He had seen the bruises in shades that spoke of weeks, not days. Edwin Hawkins had seen them too, and he had written three lines. A knock interrupted his thoughts. "Enter." A young woman stepped inside, carrying a leather medical bag and an expression of quiet determination. Dr. Helena Cross was not what society expected in a physician. She was barely 30, sharp-eyed and sharp-tongued, trained in London when most medical schools still refused women entry. Franklin had requested her specifically because she had a reputation for two things, brilliance and honesty. "Your Grace," she inclined her head. "I received your summons, Dr. Cross. Thank you for coming on such short notice." Helena set her bag on the desk. "You said it was urgent. A private medical examination?" "Yes, Lady Amalia Foster." Helena's expression shifted, recognition flickering in her eyes. The woman accused of killing her husband. The woman who may have been fighting for her life. Franklin stood, crossing to the window. "I need an honest assessment, doctor. Not what is convenient for the investigation. Not what protects reputations. The truth. I only deal in truth, Your Grace." Helena's tone was dry. "It tends to make me unpopular at dinner parties." "Good. You will examine Lady Foster thoroughly. Document everything. I want to know the extent of her injuries, how old they are, and whether they are consistent with a single violent struggle or something far worse." Helena studied him for a long moment. "You think he hurt her?" "I think someone did, repeatedly. And I think every man in that courtroom yesterday chose not to see it."
"Including you?"
Franklin turned to face her.
"Including me, until yesterday."
Helena nodded slowly. "When can I see her?"
"Now, if you are willing. She has been moved to the east wing. I have ordered the guards to remain outside unless summoned."
"And Lady Foster? Has she agreed to this examination?"
Franklin paused.
"She has not refused."
"That is not the same as consent, Your Grace."
"I know." He met Helena's gaze directly. "Which is why you will ask her. Explain what you intend to do. Give her the choice. If she refuses, you will leave immediately." Helena picked up her bag. "You are not what I expected, Duke Wells."
"What did you expect?"
"A man more interested in efficiency than truth."
Franklin's smile was brief and humorless.
"I was. Until yesterday." The east wing of Blackthorn Hall had been prepared hastily. The room they had given Amalia was neither a prison cell nor a guest chamber, but something uncomfortable in between. A fire burned in the hearth, casting warmth that did little to soften the cold elegance of the space. Heavy curtains framed windows that overlooked the snow-covered gardens. A bed stood against one wall, neatly made. A chair waited near the fire. Amalia sat in that chair, still wearing the torn morning gown, her hands resting in her lap. She had not moved since the guards brought her here hours ago. She simply sat, watching the flames, her expression distant. When the door opened,
She did not flinch. Helena entered first, followed by Franklin. Amalia's gaze moved to them, wary but unsurprised, as though she had learned to expect intrusions. "Lady Foster," Helena said gently, "my name is Dr. Helena Cross. Duke Wells has asked me to examine you, but I will not do so without your permission. You may refuse. You may ask me to leave at any time. Do you understand?" Amalia looked at Franklin. He stood near the door, deliberate distance between them, his expression carefully neutral. "Why?" Amalia asked quietly. "Because I need to understand what happened to you," Franklin said. "Not just 3 nights ago, before that. And if I refuse, then Dr. Cross will leave, and you will not be forced." Amalia studied him, searching for deception or hidden motive. She had spent years learning to read men, to anticipate their moods, to recognize when kindness was a prelude to cruelty. But Franklin's face revealed nothing except patience. Finally, she nodded. "You may examine me." Helena moved forward, setting her bag on the small table beside the chair. "I will need you to remove your dress. You may keep your undergarments if you prefer. I will be as quick and gentle as possible." Franklin turned toward the door. "You are leaving?" Amalia's voice stopped him. He looked back. "I thought you would prefer privacy." "I would prefer a witness." Her tone was flat. "In case anyone questions what is found." Franklin hesitated, then nodded. He moved to stand near the window, his back to them, giving her what privacy he could while honoring her request. Helena helped Amalia with the buttons of her gown. The fabric slipped away slowly, revealing skin marked by violence that had never been meant to see daylight. Helena's expression remained professional, but Franklin saw her hands still briefly before she continued. "May I touch you?" Helena asked softly. Amalia nodded. Helena's examination was methodical and careful. She documented each bruise, each scar, speaking in a low voice as she worked. Amalia stood motionless, her gaze fixed on the wall, her breathing controlled. She had endured this before, Franklin realized. Not examinations, perhaps, but the invasive scrutiny of being studied like evidence. "These bruises on your ribs," Helena said. "How old are they?"
2 weeks, perhaps longer.
"And these marks on your back?"
Amalia's jaw tightened.
"Older." Helena moved around her slowly, professional detachment barely masking the anger Franklin could hear creeping into her voice. "This scar along your shoulder blade. It was not treated properly. It should have been stitched. I was told it was not serious."
"By whom?"
"Dr. Hawkins." Helena's mouth pressed into a thin line. She continued her examination in silence, occasionally making notes in a small journal. When she reached Amalia's wrists, she paused. "These are from restraints," she said quietly.
"Yes."
"Good."
"Recent?"
3 days ago, when they arrested me." Helena looked up sharply.
"Only then?"
Amalia met her eyes.
"No."
The single word carried the weight of years. Helena finished the examination and helped Amalia back into her dress, her movements gentle. When Amalia was dressed again, Helena stepped back, her expression carefully controlled.
"Thank you, Lady Foster," she said. "That is all I need for now. You have been very brave."
Amalia's laugh was soft and bitter. "I have been many things, Doctor. Brave is not one of them."
"Survival requires courage," Helena replied.
"Even when we do not recognize it in ourselves." She gathered her things and turned to Franklin.
"Your Grace, may I speak with you privately?"
Franklin nodded. He looked at Amalia, who had returned to the chair by the fire, her posture rigid.
"Is there anything you need, Lady Foster?"
She did not look at him.
"I need nothing from you, Your Grace."
It was not defiance. It was self-preservation.
Amalia Foster had learned not to need anything from men in power, because needing made you vulnerable, and vulnerability invited pain.
Franklin followed Helena into the corridor, closing the door behind them. The moment they were alone, Helena's professional composure cracked.
"That woman has endured systematic abuse for years," she said, her voice low and furious.
"The bruising is extensive, and in various stages of healing. Some injuries are months old. The scars on her back and shoulders are from repeated trauma.
Her wrists show evidence of prolonged restraint, not just from the arrest. And there are other injuries I will detail in my written report that suggest sustained cruelty. Franklin's hands curled into fists at his sides. Could these injuries have resulted from a single violent struggle? Absolutely not. These are the injuries of someone who has been hurt regularly over an extended period. Someone who has been controlled, confined, and harmed by another person with deliberate intent. Her husband. That would be my conclusion, yes. Though I cannot prove it definitively. Can you prove the injuries existed before the night Victor Foster died? Without question. The bruising alone shows a clear timeline. Some of those marks are weeks old, and the scars are far older than that. Franklin exhaled slowly, his mind working through the implications. Edwin Hawkins examined her. He saw this, and reported three lines. Helena's tone was scathing. He saw what Lord Foster's reputation required him to see. Nothing more. Would you be willing to testify to your findings? Helena met his gaze steadily. I would consider it a professional obligation, Your Grace. That woman did not murder her husband in cold blood. She survived him as long as she could. Franklin nodded. Prepare your full report. Include every detail. I will reconvene the court within the week. Helena hesitated. Your Grace, if I may speak plainly? Please. Society will not want to believe you. Lord Victor Foster was beloved. Respected. Powerful men called him friend. They will protect his reputation because it protects their own. And they will destroy Lady Foster to do it. Then I will make them look at what they have been refusing to see, Franklin said quietly. Even if it damns every one of them, Helena studied him with new respect. You are risking a great deal for a woman you do not know. I am risking nothing compared to what she has already lost. Franklin returned to Amalia's room an hour later. He knocked before entering, a courtesy most men in his position would have considered unnecessary. When he stepped inside, she was still in the chair by the fire, but her posture had changed. She sat curled slightly, her arms wrapped around herself, vulnerable in a way she had not allowed herself to be during the examination. She looked up when he entered, her expression guarded. Dr. Cross has completed her report, Franklin said. Amalia said nothing. He moved closer, slowly, as though approaching something wild that might bolt. She confirmed that your injuries are extensive and long-standing, that they could not have resulted from a single struggle, that someone hurt you repeatedly over a significant period of time. Still, Amalia remained silent. Franklin crouched beside her chair, bringing himself to her eye level rather than looming over her. The movement was deliberate. Conscious. I need to understand what happened, Lady Foster. Not just the night your husband died. Before that. All of it. Why? The word was barely a whisper. Because I will not sentence you for defending yourself. Amalia looked at him directly then, and for the first time, Franklin saw something other than resignation in her eyes. He saw disbelief. You think I defended myself? Did you not? Her laugh was hollow. Is that what this is? You have decided I am a victim, and now you will rewrite the story to absolve me? I have decided that the truth matters more than convenience. The truth? Amalia's voice turned sharp. The truth is that Victor Foster was a good man. Everyone said so. Honorable. Kind. The sort of gentleman mothers wanted their daughters to marry. And what do you say? She looked away, her jaw tight. I say that masks are very convincing when worn well. Franklin reached out slowly, giving her time to pull back, and rested his hand gently on the arm of the chair near hers, not touching her, but close. Tell me about the mask. Amalia was silent for a long moment, staring into the fire. When she finally spoke, her voice was distant, as though she were describing something that had happened to someone else. He was perfect when we married, attentive, generous. He sent flowers. He wrote letters. My parents were delighted. I was 19 and stupid enough to believe that love looked like good manners and expensive gifts. She paused, her fingers twisting in the fabric of her dress. The first time he hurt me was 3 months after the wedding. I had accepted an invitation to tea with my friend Evangeline without asking his permission first. He did not raise his voice. He simply explained that wives consulted their husbands before making social commitments. Then he locked me in our bedroom for 2 days to teach me the importance of consideration. Franklin's chest tightened. After that, it was little things. Rules I had not known existed until I broke them. Do not speak too loudly at dinner. Do not laugh too much in company. Do not write letters without showing him first. Each mistake came with a lesson, usually delivered behind locked doors where no one could hear. Did anyone know? The servants heard. They always hear. But servants know better than to question their employers. And the few times I tried to tell someone my mother, a friend, they told me I was being dramatic, that all marriages required adjustment, that Victor was simply establishing his household properly. Your mother told you that? Franklin's voice was carefully controlled, but fury simmered beneath it. My mother told me I was fortunate to have married a man of Victor's standing, and that I should stop being ungrateful. Amalia's smile was bitter. Society forgives many things in a man, provided he owns enough land. Franklin closed his eyes briefly. How long did this continue? 6 years. It escalated slowly. Control became isolation. Isolation became punishment. He dismissed servants he thought were too loyal to me. He intercepted my letters. He told everyone I was fragile, delicate, prone to hysteria. And people believed him because Victor Foster was charming, and I was quiet. Why did you not leave? Amalia finally looked at him, and in her eyes, Franklin saw exhaustion so deep it had settled into her bones. Leave and go where, Your Grace. A wife's property belongs to her husband. I had no money of my own, no family who would believe me, no friends he had not already turned against me. And even if I could leave, he made it very clear what would happen if I tried. He would have me declared insane and committed to an asylum. There are doctors who will sign anything for the right price. Franklin's hand moved from the chair arm to hover near her hand, hesitating. May I? She stared at his hand. Then slowly, carefully, she turned her own palm up. He removed his glove first, a deliberate gesture, skin to skin, then rested his hand over hers. His touch was warm and steady, asking nothing, offering only presence. Amalia's breath caught. She could not remember the last time a man had touched her without intent to control or harm. The sensation was so foreign it almost frightened her. You wrote to me, Franklin said quietly. Dr. Cross mentioned a letter. Amalia nodded. 2 weeks ago, I found a moment when Victor was away. I wrote to your office asking for help. I did not know where else to turn. You have a reputation for justice. I thought perhaps. What happened when he found out? Her hand trembled beneath his. He came to me that night in a rage. He had intercepted the letter before it was posted. He locked us in his study. He told me I had embarrassed him, humiliated him, that I needed to learn my place once and for all. And then, he drew the blade. He said he would teach me a lesson I would never forget. That if I could not be a proper wife, I would be no wife at all. I think he meant to frighten me. Or perhaps he meant to do worse. I do not know. We struggled. The blade turned between us. And then he was on the floor, bleeding. And I was standing there. And for the first time in 6 years, he was not the one in control. Franklin's grip on her hand tightened gently. You did not murder him, Amalia. You fought for your life. She pulled her hand back, wrapping her arms around herself again. It does not matter what I intended. He is dead. I killed him, and nothing you uncover will change that. It changes everything. No, Your Grace, it changes nothing. Victor Foster was respected. I am no one. His death is a tragedy. Mine would be justice. That is how the world works. Franklin stood, frustration and determination warring in his expression. Then I will change how the world works. Amalia looked up at him, and for just a moment, something that might have been hope flickered in her eyes before she crushed it. Hope was dangerous. Hope made you believe things could be different, and when they inevitably were not, the disappointment was worse than the original pain. You cannot save me, Your Grace, she said softly. Franklin moved toward the door, then paused. When he looked back at her, his expression was fierce. "Watch me." He left her sitting by the fire, small and alone, but no longer quite as resigned. And Amalia Foster, who had not allowed herself to hope for anything in years, felt something fragile and terrifying begin to stir in her chest. Franklin spent the next 2 days doing something no one else had bothered to do. He investigated the marriage, not just the murder. He started with the servants. Blackthorn Hall employed 15 staff members, most of them long-term employees who had served the Foster family for years. Franklin summoned them individually to the study, not as suspects, but as witnesses. And slowly, reluctantly, they began to speak. Millie, the young housemaid, twisted her apron in her hands as she sat across from him. "I heard things sometimes, Your Grace, crying from the ladies' room, raised voices. But Mr. Bowman told us it was not our business to gossip about our employers. What did you hear specifically?" Millie's eyes filled with tears. "Lord Foster shouting, her ladyship pleading. Once, I heard something break. Glass, I think. The next day, Lady Amalia had a cut on her hand. She said she had been clumsy." "Did you believe her?"
"No, Your Grace."
"Why not?"
"Because Lady Amalia was never clumsy. She was careful. So careful. Like she was afraid of making mistakes."
Wallace, the head footman, confirmed what Millie had said. Lord Foster was particular about his household. He had rules for everything. How the fires should be laid, how meals should be served, how her ladyship should dress and behave, and if something displeased him. Wallace trailed off.
"Finish," Franklin said quietly.
"He would dismiss servants without reference, or he would punish Lady Amalia by restricting her movements. Sometimes she would not leave her rooms for days. He said she was unwell, but we knew."
"You knew she was being confined?"
"Yes, Your Grace."
"And no one reported this?"
Wallace looked down.
"To whom, Your Grace?"
"Lord Foster was a peer. We are servants. Who would believe us?" Franklin spoke to the cook, the stable master, the lady's maid who had been dismissed 2 years prior for insubordination. Every story added another layer to the picture forming in Franklin's mind. Victor Foster had not been a husband. He had been a jailer. But the most damning testimony came from someone Franklin had not expected. Evangeline Shepherd arrived at Blackthorn Hall on the third day, summoned by a letter Franklin had sent. She was a young woman of gentle bearing and fierce loyalty, the daughter of a local merchant who had been Amalia's closest friend before the marriage. "I have not seen Amalia in 4 years," Evangeline said, her voice tight with suppressed emotion. "Victor forbade it. He said I was a bad influence, that I encouraged her to be willful and disobedient."
"What actually happened?" Franklin asked.
Evangeline's hands curled into fists in her lap. "I saw bruises on her arms at a garden party. I asked her about them. She lied and said she had bumped into furniture. I did not believe her. I confronted Victor privately, told him I knew he was hurting her. 2 days later, he informed Amalia that I was no longer welcome in their home. He told everyone I had made improper advances and that I was spreading malicious rumors to damage his reputation. No one believed me. Amalia was not allowed to see me again."
"Did she try to contact you?"
"Once. A letter reached me 6 months later. It had been hidden in a book she lent to another acquaintance. In it, she apologized for believing Victor's lies about me. She said she had been wrong, that she missed me, that she was afraid." Evangeline's voice broke. "I tried to visit her, but the servants turned me away. Victor told me if I returned, he would have me arrested for trespassing." Franklin leaned forward.
"Do you still have the letter?"
"Yes. I have kept it all this time, hoping I might someday return it to her.
I will need to see it."
Evangeline reached into her reticule and withdrew a folded piece of paper, worn from being read many times. She handed it to Franklin with trembling fingers. The handwriting was elegant but hurried, the words carefully chosen but desperate underneath. "Dearest Evangeline, I am sorry for everything Victor said about you. I know now that he lied. I know he has always lied. I miss you terribly. I am alone here, and I am afraid of what he might do. If something happens to me, please know that you were the truest friend I ever had. A. Franklin read it twice, his anger growing colder and sharper with each word. Miss Shepherd, would you be willing to testify to this?
I would testify to anything if it helps Amalia. Even if it means standing before the same society that shunned you?
Evangeline lifted her chin. Especially then. That night, Franklin sat in the study reviewing everything he had gathered. Testimony from servants, letters, medical reports. A pattern so clear it should have been visible to anyone who cared to look. But no one had looked. Because Victor Foster had been a gentleman, and gentlemen were given the benefit of doubt. Because Amalia had been a wife, and wives were expected to obey, to endure, to be grateful for whatever their husbands chose to give them. A knock on the door interrupted his thoughts. Enter. Francis Bowman stepped inside, his expression carefully neutral.
Your Grace, may I speak with you?
Of course. Francis closed the door behind him.
I have heard that you have been interviewing the household staff.
Yes.
And Miss Shepherd.
Yes.
Francis's jaw tightened.
Your Grace, with respect, I must advise caution. Lord Foster's reputation is built on lies, Franklin interrupted coldly.
Be that as it may, dragging his name through scandal will hurt many people. Lady Rosemary, the family connections, the estate's standing.
And what about Lady Amalia?
Will continuing to ignore what happened to her hurt her?
Francis shifted uncomfortably. Lady Amalia confessed to killing her husband. The case is clear.
The case is incomplete.
Deliberately so.
I do not understand what you hope to achieve, Your Grace.
Even if Lord Foster was difficult,
it does not change the fact that she killed him.
Franklin stood, moving around the desk to face Francis directly.
Tell me something, Mr. Bowman. Did you know Victor Foster was abusing his wife?
Francis's silence was answer enough.
You knew, Franklin said quietly. You saw the bruises. You heard the reports, and you did nothing.
It was not my place to interfere in a marriage. It was your place to protect a vulnerable woman from harm.
Lady Amalia was Lord Foster's wife, his responsibility. She was a person being hurt, and you chose his reputation over her safety.
Franklin's voice remained calm, but ice ran through every word.
You will prepare a full accounting of every instance in which you observed or were informed of Lord Foster's treatment of his wife. You will include dates, witnesses, and any correspondence related to the matter, and you will deliver it to me by tomorrow evening.
Your Grace, I cannot.
You can, and you will, or I will ensure that your complicity in this matter becomes a matter of public record.
Francis went pale.
You would ruin me.
I would hold you accountable.
There is a difference.
Francis left without another word, his footsteps heavy on the marble floor.
Franklin watched him go, then returned to his desk. He had one more person to confront, and this conversation would be far less civil.
Lady Rosemary Foster received Franklin in the drawing room the following afternoon. She sat in a high-backed chair like a queen granting audience, dressed in black silk that made her look carved from stone. Her face was handsome in a severe way, her eyes cold and assessing.
Duke Wells, she said as he entered. I trust you have come to inform me when my daughter-in-law's sentence will be carried out.
Franklin did not sit.
I have come to ask you about your son's marriage.
Victor's marriage was perfectly respectable.
Was it?
Lady Rosemary's expression tightened.
I do not appreciate your tone, Your Grace.
And I do not appreciate being lied to, Lady Foster.
Franklin crossed to stand before her, his presence imposing. Did you know your son was abusing his wife?
That is a vile accusation.
It is a fact supported by medical evidence, servant testimony, and Lady Amalia's own injuries. Now answer the question. Did you know?
Lady Rosemary's mouth pressed into a thin line.
Amalia was always dramatic, prone to hysteria.
Victor was patient with her, but she required firm guidance.
Firm guidance.
Franklin's voice was dangerously soft.
Is that what you call locking a woman in her room for days?
Striking her? Isolating her from everyone who cared about her?
You were not there, Your Grace. You did not see how she provoked him.
Nothing she did justifies what he did to her.
Victor was my son,
Lady Rosemary's composure finally cracked. He was a good man, respected, admired, and now you want to destroy his memory because that woman is a human being who suffered for 6 years while everyone around her, including you, chose to look away. She killed him! She defended herself against a man who had terrorized her for years. There is a difference, and I will make certain the court understands it. Lady Rosemary stood, her face flushed with fury. You will regret this, Duke Wells. Victor had friends, powerful friends. They will not allow you to slander his name to protect a murderer. Then let them come forward. Let them explain why they valued his reputation more than his wife's life. Franklin moved toward the door, then paused. One more question, Lady Foster. Did you destroy any of Lady Amalia's letters? Silence. I have already spoken to the household staff. They will testify if necessary. So I will ask you again. Did you destroy correspondence addressed to or written by Lady Amalia? Lady Rosemary lifted her chin. I did what was necessary to protect my son's household from outside interference. You destroyed evidence that might have saved her. I protected my family. Franklin looked at her with something close to pity. No, Lady Foster. You protected a lie, and it cost a woman 6 years of her life. He left her standing in the drawing room, furious and alone. That evening, Franklin returned to Amalia's quarters. She was standing at the window when he entered, watching snow fall across the gardens. She did not turn when she heard the door. I have spoken to your servants, Franklin said quietly, to Miss Shepherd, to your mother-in-law. Amalia's shoulders tensed. And what did they tell you? The truth. All of it. Every piece of it that was ignored or dismissed or hidden. She turned then, and Franklin saw tears on her face, the first tears she had allowed since her arrest. And now you know what I am. I know what was done to you. It is the same thing. No. Franklin crossed the room to her, stopping a careful distance away. You are not defined by what he did to you, Amalia. You are defined by how you survived it. She shook her head, tears falling faster now. I am broken, Your Grace. Ruined. Even if you clear my name, even if I walk free, I will still be the woman who married a monster and stayed for 6 years. I will still be marked by him. Franklin removed his glove slowly, then reached out and gently caught one of her tears with his thumb, his touch feather light against her cheek. The intimacy of the gesture stole her breath. You are not broken, he said, his voice rough with emotion he did not bother to hide. You are standing here. Alive, after 6 years in hell. That does not make you weak. That makes you extraordinary. Amalia closed her eyes, leaning almost imperceptibly into his touch, before catching herself and pulling back. Why are you doing this? Why do you care what happens to me? Franklin let his hand fall, but his gaze never left hers. Because the first time I saw you, every scar on your body accused every man in that room, including me. And I will not compound that failure by letting injustice stand. And when this is over, when the trial ends and society has picked over every detail of my humiliation, what then? Then you will be free to choose what comes next. No one will cage you again. I give you my word. Amalia searched his face, looking for deception, for hidden motive, for the trap she had learned to expect from men who made promises. But all she saw was fierce determination and something else, something that made her heart beat faster and terrified her in equal measure. She saw desire tempered by respect, longing held in check by honor. She saw a man who wanted her but would never take what was not freely given. I do not know how to trust anymore, she whispered. Then do not trust me yet, Franklin replied. Just let me prove that I am worth the risk. The fire crackled in the silence between them. Snow continued to fall outside, and in that quiet moment, something shifted. Not love, not yet. But the fragile, terrifying possibility of it. The next morning, Franklin summoned Dr. Edwin Hawkins to the study. The physician arrived looking uncomfortable, his face pale and his movements nervous. He had heard about Franklin's interviews with the household staff. He knew what was coming. Dr. Hawkins, Franklin said without preamble, When you examined Lord Victor Foster's body, what did you find?
Edwin cleared his throat.
A single stab wound to the chest, Your Grace.
Fatal.
The blade had pierced the heart.
And when you examined Lady Amalia?
I noted bruising consistent with the struggle.
Consistent with which struggle, Doctor?
The one that killed her husband? Or the years of abuse that preceded it?
Edwin's jaw tightened.
I examined what was relevant to the investigation.
That phrase keeps appearing in your reports. What was relevant? Who decided what was relevant?
I made professional judgments based on the evidence before me.
Franklin leaned forward, his tone sharp.
You saw scars on her back, bruises in various stages of healing, injuries that could not possibly have resulted from a single violent encounter.
And you wrote 3 lines in your report.
Why?
Your Grace, I...
Did Francis Bowman instruct you to limit your findings?
Edwin hesitated just long enough to confirm the truth.
Franklin's expression hardened.
Did Lady Rosemary?
I was asked to be discreet. Lord Foster's reputation was at stake. There was concern that dwelling on certain details might create unnecessary scandal.
Unnecessary scandal.
Franklin's voice was deadly calm. A woman was beaten and controlled for 6 years, and you considered documenting that fact to be unnecessary scandal?
I did not see evidence of...
You saw exactly what you chose to see, Doctor. You saw a dead aristocrat who needed protecting, and a living woman who did not. And you made a choice.
Franklin stood.
You will revise your medical report to include every injury you observed on Lady Amalia's body, with detailed notes on their age and likely cause. You will submit this revised report to me within 2 days. And if I find that you have omitted or minimized anything, I will ensure your medical license is reviewed by the Royal College of Physicians.
Edwin's face went white.
Your Grace, please.
2 days, Dr. Hawkins.
Edwin fled the study like a man escaping judgment, which, Franklin reflected, was precisely what he was. Franklin's next target was the locked study where Victor had died. He had examined the room briefly during his initial review, but now he returned with purpose. The study was elegant and cold, lined with bookshelves that held volumes arranged for display rather than reading. A large desk dominated the center, its surface clear except for a dried bloodstain where Victor's body had fallen. Franklin searched methodically. He opened drawers, examined papers, ran his hands along the underside of furniture looking for hidden compartments. And in the bottom drawer of Victor's desk, locked with a small key Franklin found tucked inside a book, he discovered something that made his blood run cold.
A journal.
Not a diary of daily events, but a carefully maintained record of control. Page after page detailing Amalia's behavior, her infractions, and the punishments Victor had deemed appropriate. The entries were clinical, almost businesslike in their cruelty.
March 12th, A.
Spoke too freely at dinner with the Stevenson family, corrected her privately afterward. She understands now.
April 3rd, discovered A had written to her mother without permission.
Confiscated letter.
Restricted her writing materials for 1 week as consequence.
May 20th, A. Attempted to leave the house without informing me of her destination. This willfulness cannot be tolerated.
Confined her to her rooms for 3 days.
She was appropriately apologetic upon release.
July 8th. Found A reading improper literature novels.
Removed all books from her access except those I approve. A wife's mind must be carefully guided.
Franklin read entry after entry, his hands shaking with rage.
The journal spanned all 6 years of the marriage, documenting Victor's systematic dismantling of Amalia's independence, her spirit, her very self. The final entry was dated 2 weeks before Victor's death.
November 10th, intercepted letter from A, addressed to Duke Franklin Wells.
She has been attempting to contact authorities behind my back, claiming abuse.
This betrayal cannot stand.
She has forced my hand. Drastic measures will be necessary to ensure her complete obedience.
If gentle correction will not suffice, stronger methods must be employed.
Franklin closed the journal carefully, though he wanted to hurl it across the room.
This was evidence.
Undeniable. damning evidence written in Victor's own hand. He took the journal and left the study, his mind already moving through the implications. Victor had planned something terrible. Amalia's letter to Franklin had not been paranoia or dramatics. It had been a desperate plea from a woman who knew her husband was planning something worse than anything he had done before. And when Victor confronted her with the intercepted letter, she had fought back. Not murder. Self-defense. That afternoon, Franklin received an unexpected visitor. Cecilia Scott was announced by the butler, and Franklin rose as she entered. She was a woman in her middle years, elegantly dressed, with the quiet authority of someone accustomed to being heard. She was also, Franklin knew from his inquiries, a distant cousin of Amalia's, and one of the few family members who had attempted to maintain contact after the marriage. Duke Wells, Cecilia said, inclining her head. Thank you for receiving me. Lady Scott, please sit. Cecilia settled into the chair across from his desk, her hands folded neatly in her lap. I heard you were investigating the circumstances of Lord Foster's death. I felt I should come forward with information that may be relevant. I am listening. I attempted to visit Amalia several times over the years. Each time, I was turned away. Victor always had an excuse. She was unwell. She was resting. She was not receiving visitors. But twice, I managed to see her briefly when Victor was away from the estate. What did you observe? The first time was 3 years ago. Amalia looked thin, exhausted. She had a bruise on her cheek she tried to hide with powder. When I asked her directly if she was well, she said yes, but her eyes told a different story. I urged her to leave, to come stay with me. She said she could not, that Victor would never allow it. Did she say why? She said he had made it very clear what would happen if she left. That he would have her declared insane. That no court would believe her over him. That she would lose everything, including her freedom. Cecilia's voice tightened. I went to her mother afterward. I told her what I had seen. She said I was interfering in private matters that were none of my concern. And the second visit? 8 months ago. I arrived unannounced, and the servants were too flustered to turn me away immediately. I found Amalia in the drawing room. She had bandages on her wrists. She said she had burned herself accidentally while tending the fire. But the bandages were not placed like burn dressings. They were wrapped as though covering wounds from restraints. Franklin's jaw tightened. What did you do? I confronted her again. I begged her to leave with me that very day. She refused. She said leaving would only make things worse. That Victor had already threatened to have her committed if she embarrassed him publicly. She asked me not to come back. Not to interfere. She said it would only endanger us both. Did you contact authorities? Cecilia looked down, shame coloring her features. I spoke to a magistrate I knew socially. I told him I had concerns about my cousin's welfare. He asked if I had proof of wrongdoing. I said I had observed injuries and concerning behavior. He told me that marital matters were private, and that interfering could constitute slander against Lord Foster unless I had concrete evidence of criminal behavior. And you did not pursue it further. To my eternal shame, no. I convinced myself that Amalia was an adult, that if she truly wanted help, she would ask more directly. I told myself I was respecting her wishes. Cecilia met Franklin's eyes, tears shining in her own. I abandoned her when she needed me most. I came here today because I cannot live with that silence any longer. If you are fighting for her, I want to help. Franklin softened slightly. Your testimony will be valuable, Lady Scott. I will testify to anything that helps her. And your grace? Cecilia hesitated. Please tell Amalia that I am sorry, that I should have done more. You can tell her yourself, if she is willing to see you. Cecilia's expression brightened with hope. I would be grateful for that chance. After Cecilia left, Franklin sat for a long time considering everything he had gathered. Testimony. Medical evidence. Victor's journal. A pattern so clear it could not be denied. But he knew what was coming. Lady Rosemary had been right about one thing. Victor Foster had powerful friends. Men who had benefited from his connections, who had admired his social graces, who would see any attack on his reputation as a threat to their own. They would fight. They would try to discredit Amalia, to paint her as a liar or a lunatic. They would protect the image of the gentleman they had known, rather than confront the monster he had been in private. Franklin would have to be ready for that fight. That evening, he visited Amalia again. She was reading when he entered, a book resting in her lap. She looked up, surprised. "Your Grace, I did not expect you." "I have news," Franklin said. "Several pieces of it." Amalia set the book aside carefully. "Good news or bad?" "Both, perhaps." He pulled a chair close to hers, maintaining respectful distance but near enough to speak quietly. "I found your husband's journal. He kept detailed records of everything." Amalia went very still. "What kind of records?" "Documentation of his control over you, your perceived infractions, the punishments he inflicted. It spans the entire marriage." She closed her eyes, pain flickering across her features. "He always said he was teaching me, improving me. I used to wonder if he was right, if I really was as flawed as he claimed." "Amalia, look at me." She opened her eyes reluctantly. "You were not flawed. You were trapped by a man who derived pleasure from controlling you. Everything he did was designed to make you doubt yourself, to make you believe you deserved his cruelty. You did not." "What else did the journal say?" Franklin hesitated, then decided she deserved the full truth. "The final entry was written the day he intercepted your letter to me. He wrote that you had forced his hand, that gentle correction was no longer sufficient, that he would need to employ stronger methods to ensure your obedience." Amalia's face went pale. "He was going to kill me. I believe he was going to do something terrible. And when he confronted you with the letter, you fought back because you understood the danger you were in." "I did not plan it," she whispered. "I did not go into that study intending to kill him. I just wanted to survive the night." "I know. Will the journal help?" "It proves a pattern of abuse. It proves premeditation on his part, not yours. Combined with the medical evidence, the servant testimony, and the witness accounts, it builds a compelling case that you acted in self-defense." Amalia laughed bitterly. "Self-defense. Will society care about that? Or will they only see a wife who killed her husband?" "Society will see what I make them see," Franklin said firmly. "I am calling for a public review of the case, a full hearing where all evidence will be presented. Dr. Cross will testify. The servants will testify. Lady Scott will testify. And if you are willing, you will tell your story in your own words." Terror flashed across Amalia's face. "You want me to stand before the court and speak about everything?" "Only if you are willing. I will not force you. But your voice is powerful, Amalia. Your truth is powerful. And if you can find the courage to speak it, no one will be able to ignore what was done to you." She stood abruptly, moving to the window, her arms wrapped around herself. "You are asking me to stand in front of everyone who called me fortunate to marry Victor, everyone who praised him, everyone who looked the other way when I begged for help, and relive every moment of humiliation and pain." Franklin rose and moved to stand beside her, not touching, but present. "I am asking you to let the world see you, really see you, not as the quiet, obedient wife Victor tried to create, but as the woman who survived him. And if they do not believe me, then I will make them look at the evidence until they have no choice but to believe." He turned to face her, his expression fierce. "You are not alone in this, Amalia." "Not anymore." She looked up at him, searching his face. "Why does this matter so much to you?" The question was direct, and it deserved an honest answer. Franklin had been asking himself the same thing for days. Why had he risked his reputation, his standing, his carefully maintained distance from emotional entanglement? Why had this woman, this case, this injustice, gotten past every defense he had built? "Because," he said slowly, "I have spent years dispensing justice based on evidence and law, clean, efficient, unemotional. And then I walked into that sentencing chamber expecting to see a monster. and instead I found someone who had been made to suffer while everyone looked away. I found proof that justice and law are not always the same thing. And I found... He stopped, the words catching in his throat.
Found what? Amalia whispered.
Franklin reached out slowly, giving her time to pull away, and brushed a strand of dark hair from her face. His touch was gentle, reverent, nothing like the possessive claiming she had learned to fear. I found someone extraordinary, he said quietly. Someone brave and strong and deserving of far more than the world has given her, and I cannot walk away from that. Amalia's breath caught. Her heart was racing, torn between the instinct to flee and the desperate, terrifying desire to lean into his touch, to believe that a man's hands could offer comfort instead of pain. You barely know me, she managed. I know enough. You know what Victor made me. The broken pieces he left behind. I know what you made of yourself despite him, Franklin countered. I know you survived 6 years of cruelty and came out with your spirit bruised but not destroyed. I know you are standing here, alive and fighting, when most would have surrendered long ago. That is who I see, Amalia. Not what was done to you, but what you refused to let him take. A tear slipped down her cheek. Franklin caught it with his thumb, the gesture achingly tender. I am afraid, she whispered. Of the trial? Of this. Of you. Of feeling anything except fear. Franklin let his hand fall, though the loss of contact cost him. Then we will take this slowly. One step at a time. I will not push you. I will not demand anything you are not ready to give. But I will not stop fighting for you either. Amalia nodded, unable to speak past the emotion clogging her throat. Franklin stepped back, giving her space, giving her control. The hearing is scheduled for 3 days from now, he said, his tone shifting back to practical matters. You have time to decide whether you want to testify. Whatever you choose, I will support you. He left her standing by the window, shaken and uncertain but no longer quite so alone. And as the door closed behind him, Amalia pressed her hand to her chest, feeling her heart beat wild and terrified and alive. For the first time in 6 years, she felt something other than fear when she thought about her future. She felt the fragile, dangerous stirring of hope. 3 days later, Blackthorn Hall's Great Hall was transformed into a courtroom unlike any the county had seen. Franklin had insisted on a public hearing rather than a private sentencing. Every aristocrat within 50 miles received notice. The press was invited. Seats were filled with nobles who had praised Victor Foster at dinner parties, with magistrates who had dismissed concerns about his marriage, with society matrons who had called Amalia fortunate. They came expecting a spectacle. They came expecting to watch a murderess receive her due. What they received instead was a reckoning. The hall was arranged with precise formality. Franklin sat at the head, his expression stern and unreadable. Dr. Helena Cross waited near the witness chair, her medical bag at her side. Francis Bowman sat to one side, his face pale and tight. Lady Rosemary occupied a prominent seat in the front row, dressed in mourning black, her expression cold and triumphant. And in a chair separate from everyone else, guarded but not restrained, sat Amalia. She wore a simple gray dress, high-necked and modest, her hair pulled back severely. She looked small in the Great Hall's grandeur, but she sat with her spine straight, her hands folded calmly in her lap. She had made her decision. She would testify. She would speak her truth, no matter how much it cost her. Franklin called the hearing to order. We are gathered to review the case against Lady Amalia Foster, accused of murdering her husband, Lord Victor Foster. New evidence has come to light that requires examination before sentence is passed. This hearing will be conducted with thoroughness and respect for truth, regardless of where that truth leads. He gestured to Dr. Cross. Dr. Helena Cross, you examined Lady Foster at my request. Please share your findings with the court. Helena stood and moved to the witness chair with confidence. She did not waver under the scrutiny of the assembled nobles. I conducted a full medical examination of Lady Amalia Foster 4 days ago, she began, her voice clear and professional. I found extensive evidence of long-term physical abuse. bruising in various stages of healing, some fresh, some weeks old, scarring consistent with repeated trauma over multiple years, evidence of poorly healed fractures in her ribs, marks on her wrists indicative of prolonged restraint. Murmurs rippled through the crowd. Lady Rosemary's expression tightened. Could these injuries have resulted from the struggle during Lord Foster's death? Franklin asked. Absolutely not. The bruising alone shows a clear timeline. Some of those injuries are at least a month old. The scarring is even older years, in some cases. These are the injuries of someone who has been systematically harmed over an extended period, not the result of a single violent encounter. In your professional opinion, Doctor, what caused these injuries? Helena looked directly at the assembled crowd. Repeated physical abuse by someone with regular access to Lady Foster. Given that she was isolated in her home with limited contact outside her immediate household, the most likely perpetrator is her husband, Lord Victor Foster. The murmurs grew louder. Franklin allowed them for a moment, then called for silence. Dr. Hawkins also examined Lady Foster. His report was considerably less detailed. Why do you think that is? Helena's expression turned cold. I cannot speak to Dr. Hawkins's motivations. I can only say that any competent physician examining Lady Foster would have observed the same injuries I documented. Whether they chose to report them is a different matter. Franklin nodded. Thank you, Doctor. He looked to the crowd. I am submitting Dr. Cross's full medical report as evidence, along with Dr. Hawkins's revised report, which now includes details he initially omitted. He held up both documents. Edwin Hawkins, sitting in the back, looked like he wanted to disappear. Next, Franklin called the servants. One by one, they came forward. Millie, the housemaid, testified about the crying she had heard, the broken glass, the days when Amalia was not allowed to leave her rooms. Wallace, the footman, described Victor's rigid control, his swift dismissals of staff who showed Amalia sympathy, the tension that permeated the household. The cook testified that Amalia had often missed meals, that Victor had controlled her diet as part of his guidance. The former lady's maid, dismissed 2 years prior, described being ordered to search Amalia's belongings for contraband letters, books, anything Victor had not approved. Each testimony added another layer to the truth that society had refused to see. By the time the servants finished, the mood in the hall had shifted from skeptical curiosity to uncomfortable realization. Then Franklin called Lady Cecilia Scott. Cecilia testified about her visits, about the bruises and bandages, about Amalia's quiet desperation and fear. She spoke of going to the magistrate and being dismissed. She spoke of her own failure to push harder, and her voice broke when she apologized directly to Amalia across the crowded room. Amalia, for her part, sat motionless, her expression controlled, but tears tracked silently down her face. When Cecilia finished, Franklin stood and held up a leather-bound book. This is a journal kept by Lord Victor Foster throughout his marriage to Lady Amalia. It documents, in his own hand, his systematic control over her behavior, her correspondence, her movements, and her very thoughts. It details punishments he inflicted for perceived infractions. And in the final entry, written the day before his death, he records his intention to employ stronger methods to ensure her obedience after discovering she had attempted to seek help. He opened to a marked page and read aloud, "She has forced my hand. Drastic measures will be necessary." The silence in the hall was absolute. Franklin set the journal down. Lord Victor Foster was not murdered by a cruel wife. He was killed by a woman defending herself against a man who had terrorized her for 6 years and was planning something worse. The question before this court is not whether Lady Amalia killed her husband. She has admitted that freely. The question is whether she committed murder, or whether she fought for her life against a man who had already stolen 6 years of it. Lady Rosemary stood abruptly. "This is a mockery. You are destroying my son's reputation based on the word of servants and a woman who killed him. Victor was a gentleman, respected, admired, and now you want to paint him as a monster to excuse her crime." Franklin's gaze swung to her, cold and unyielding. Your son kept a journal documenting his abuse.
That is not my word, Lady Foster. It is his.
Lise, that journal could be a forgery.
It is in his handwriting, verified by multiple witnesses who knew his hand.
It references events confirmed by servant testimony and medical evidence.
And even if you refuse to believe it, I have one more witness who will speak to the truth of what happened in this marriage.
He looked at Amalia.
Lady Foster, if you are willing, I would like to hear your account of your marriage and the night your husband died.
The room went silent. All eyes turned to Amalia. She sat very still for a moment, then slowly stood. Her legs trembled, but she walked to the witness chair with her head high.
Franklin moved closer, his presence a quiet support.
You do not have to do this if you are not ready.
Amalia looked at him, then at the assembled crowd at the nobles who had praised Victor, at the magistrates who had dismissed her, at Lady Rosemary glaring from her seat.
I am ready, she said quietly.
Franklin nodded and stepped back.
Lady Foster, please tell the court about your marriage to Lord Victor Foster.
Amalia took a slow breath, steadying herself. When she spoke, her voice was soft but clear, carrying through the silent hall.
When I married Victor, I was 19 years old. He was charming, attentive, everything a young woman was taught to want in a husband. My parents were delighted. I thought I was fortunate.
She paused, gathering strength.
The first time he hurt me was 3 months after our wedding. I had accepted an invitation without asking his permission. He explained that wives should consult their husbands. Then he locked me in our bedroom for 2 days. When he let me out, he told me he had done it because he cared about me, because he wanted to protect me from my own poor judgment.
The crowd shifted uncomfortably.
After that, there were rules. Rules I learned by breaking them. Do not speak too much at dinner. Do not write letters without showing him first. Do not leave the house without telling him where I was going and why. Each broken rule came with a lesson.
What kind of lessons?
Franklin asked gently.
Isolation. Days confined to my room, sometimes longer. He would take away my books, my writing materials, anything that gave me comfort. He said I needed time to reflect on my behavior.
Did the lessons escalate?
Amalia's hands clenched in her lap.
Yes.
Isolation became physical. He would grab my wrists until they bruised. He would shove me against walls.
Once, he broke two of my ribs because I had smiled at a gentleman at a party. He said I was being inappropriate, inviting scandal.
Did you tell anyone?
I tried. I told my mother. She said I was being dramatic, that all marriages required adjustment.
I tried to tell Dr. Hawkins once, when he came to treat a fever. He looked at the bruises on my arms and said nothing.
I wrote to my cousin Cecilia.
Victor intercepted the letter and burned it.
After that, he dismissed the servant who had posted it.
Why did you not leave?
Amalia looked directly at Lady Rosemary.
Because he made it very clear what would happen if I tried.
He told me he would have me declared insane and committed to an asylum. He said no one would believe me over him, that I had no money of my own, no family who would take me in, nowhere to go.
And he was right.
Everyone believed Victor was a perfect husband.
No one believed I was anything but ungrateful.
Her voice strengthened, anger seeping through the fear.
He controlled everything. What I wore, what I read, who I spoke to, what I ate, when I slept.
He said he was improving me, shaping me into a proper wife.
But what he was really doing was erasing me.
Piece by piece, year by year, until I barely remembered who I had been before him.
What happened 2 weeks before his death?
Amalia's breath hitched.
I wrote a letter to Duke Wells. I had heard he was fair, that he listened to cases others dismissed.
I begged for help.
I told him I was afraid my husband would kill me.
I hid the letter in a book and gave it to a maid to post when Victor was away.
But he found it.
Yes. He came to me that night in a rage. He had the letter in his hand. He said I had humiliated him, betrayed him, that I had left him no choice but to take permanent measures to ensure I could never embarrass him again.
Franklin's voice was quiet but firm.
What happened in the study the night he died?
Amalia closed her eyes briefly, then opened them, her gaze steady. He was drunk, furious. He locked the study door and told me we were going to settle this once and for all. I asked what he meant. He pulled a blade from his desk drawer. He said if I could not be a proper wife, if I insisted on defying him, then I would be no wife at all, that he would end it his way, and society would mourn him and pity him for being married to a madwoman. The crowd was utterly silent now, hanging on every word. I backed away. I begged him to put the blade down. He laughed. He said begging did not suit me, that I should have learned submission years ago. Then he lunged at me. Her voice broke, but she forced herself to continue. We struggled. I do not remember all of it. Just fear. Just fighting. Just trying to survive one more moment. The blade turned between us. I do not know how. I do not know if I pushed him or if he fell, or if it was simply chaos and terror and two people locked in a room with death between them. But then he was on the floor, bleeding, and I was standing there, and for the first time in 6 years, he was not the one in control. Tears streamed down her face now, but she did not look away from the crowd. I did not plan to kill him. I just wanted to live. Is that murder, or is it survival? She looked at Franklin, exhausted and raw and stripped bare. I survived my husband, Your Grace. That is my crime. The hall erupted. Nobles whispered frantically. Some looked horrified. Some looked ashamed. A few women in the crowd were crying openly. Lady Rosemary stood again, her face flushed with fury. She is lying. She killed my son, and now she invents stories to excuse it. She probably seduced the Duke himself to... Enough! Franklin's voice cracked like a whip. You will not sully this proceeding with baseless accusations, Lady Foster. Baseless? Look at how she manipulates you. How she... I said enough. Franklin moved to stand beside Amalia's chair, a protective barrier between her and the venom spewing from Lady Rosemary. You stood by while your son terrorized his wife. You destroyed evidence that might have saved her. You chose his reputation over her life. You do not have the moral standing to accuse anyone of manipulation. He looked at the crowd, his expression fierce. Every person in this room shares responsibility for what happened to Lady Foster. We all chose to believe the mask rather than look for the truth beneath it. We all valued reputation over reality, and when a woman begged for help, we dismissed her as dramatic or hysterical or ungrateful. He held up Victor's journal. This is what we allowed to happen. This is what we enabled by refusing to see. And if we sentence Lady Foster to death for defending herself against this, then we are not dispensing justice. We are finishing what her husband started. The silence that followed was heavy with shame and realization. Franklin looked down at Amalia, his expression softening. You are dismissed, Lady Foster. Thank you for your courage. Amalia stood on trembling legs. As she passed Franklin, he caught her hand briefly, squeezing gently. The touch steadied her, gave her strength to walk back to her seat with her head high. Franklin turned back to the assembled court. I am ruling that Lady Amalia Foster acted in self-defense against an immediate threat to her life. All charges of murder are dismissed. She is free. The hall exploded into noise, some shocked, some angry, some relieved. But Franklin's voice cut through it all. This hearing is concluded. He struck the gavel once, final and absolute. Amalia did not feel free. She sat in her quarters after the hearing, staring at nothing, her mind unable to process what had just happened. The charges were dismissed. She would not hang. She could leave Blackthorn Hall, leave the estate, leave the prison that had been her marriage. She was free. But freedom felt strange and terrifying, like a weight lifted that had been holding her together. Without the structure of fear, without the constant vigilance required to survive, she did not know who she was supposed to be. A knock on the door made her flinch. Come in, she said quietly. Franklin entered, still dressed in the formal black he had worn for the hearing. He looked exhausted, but relieved. How are you? He asked. Amalia laughed, the sound hollow.
I do not know. I should be happy, relieved, something, but I just feel empty. Franklin moved closer, then hesitated. May I sit? She nodded, and he settled into the chair across from hers, maintaining respectful distance even now. What you did today was extraordinary, he said quietly. Speaking in front of all those people, reliving everything. That took more courage than most possess. It did not feel like courage. It felt like desperation. Like if I did not speak, I would disappear entirely. You spoke and they heard you. That matters. Amalia looked at him, really looked at him. He had fought for her when everyone else had looked away. He had risked his reputation, his standing, his carefully maintained distance from emotional entanglement, and he had asked for nothing in return. Why? She asked. Why did you do all of this for me? Franklin was quiet for a moment, choosing his words carefully. Because you deserved someone to fight for you. Because justice mattered more than convenience. And because... He stopped, and Amalia saw conflict in his expression. Because? She prompted. He removed his glove slowly, then reached out and rested his hand over hers where it lay in her lap. The gesture was deliberate, asking permission, offering rather than taking. Because from the moment I saw you, every instinct I have spent years controlling told me you were someone worth knowing, worth protecting, worth. He hesitated. Worth caring for. Amalia's breath caught. His hand was warm over hers, solid and steady and so different from any touch she had known in her marriage. She should pull away. She should protect herself. But instead, she turned her hand over beneath his, palm to palm, fingers slowly curling to hold him back. I do not know how to do this, she whispered. I do not know how to trust that a man's touch can be gentle, that wanting can be safe. Then we will learn together. Franklin's thumb brushed across her knuckles, soft and reverent. There is no rush, Amalia. No expectation. I will not demand anything you are not ready to give. She looked at their joined hands, at the simple intimacy of it, and felt tears prick her eyes. I am broken, Franklin. Victor broke things inside me that I do not know how to fix. You are not broken. You are healing. There is a difference. How can you want someone like me? Someone marked by another man's cruelty? Franklin lifted her hand gently and pressed his lips to her knuckles, the kiss feather-light and achingly tender. I do not want someone unmarked by life. I want you. Scars and strength and every imperfect, extraordinary piece of who you are. Amalia closed her eyes, letting herself feel the kiss, the warmth of his breath against her skin, the safety of being touched without pain following. When she opened her eyes again, Franklin was watching her with an intensity that should have frightened her, but instead made her feel seen in a way she had never experienced. What happens now? She asked. The trial is over. I am free. What am I supposed to do with that freedom? Anything you want. Go anywhere you want. Be whoever you want to be. And if I do not know who that is anymore, then you have time to discover it. He squeezed her hand gently. You could return to your family. Travel. Find new pursuits. The choice is entirely yours. What if? Amalia hesitated, fear and hope warring in her chest. What if I chose to stay? Here, I mean. Not at Blackthorn Hall, but nearby. Franklin's expression shifted, hope flickering in his eyes. Is that what you want? I do not know what I want yet. But I know I feel safer with you than I have felt with anyone in years. And I know that when you touch me, I do not feel trapped. I feel, she searched for the words. I feel like I might remember what it is to be myself again. Then stay, Franklin said simply. Stay as long as you need. I have a property in the next county. Smaller than this. Quieter. You could stay there. No obligations. No expectations. Just time and space to heal. And you? Her voice was barely a whisper. I will visit, if you allow it. I will write, if you prefer distance. I will give you whatever you need, Amalia, including my absence, if that is what helps you most. She looked at him at this man who had seen her at her worst, and still looked at her like she was precious. This man who asked permission before touching her, who offered freedom rather than cages.
"I do not want your absence," she said quietly. I want to see what this could be, between us, if I can learn to trust again."
Franklin's smile was soft and full of promise.
"Then we will take our time, one day at a time, one moment at a time, until you are ready."
They sat in comfortable silence, hands still joined, as the evening light faded outside the window. It was not a declaration of love. It was not a promise of forever. But it was a beginning. And for Amalia, who had not believed in beginnings for 6 years, that was everything. 2 weeks later, Amalia stood on the balcony of Franklin's country estate, watching the sun rise over unfamiliar gardens. The house was smaller than Blackthorn Hall, built of warm stone and surrounded by woods that felt protective rather than imprisoning. She had her own rooms in the east wing, decorated simply but comfortably. No locked doors, no restraints, no rules except the ones she chose for herself. Franklin had been true to his word. He visited daily, but he never stayed longer than she wanted. He never entered her rooms without invitation. He never touched her without asking first. Slowly, painstakingly, he was teaching her that men could be trusted, that desire did not have to mean danger, that closeness could feel safe. And Amalia was learning. She heard footsteps behind her and turned to find Franklin approaching, carrying 2 cups of tea. He had developed a habit of bringing her tea in the mornings, a small ritual that gave them time together without pressure.
"Good morning," he said, offering her a cup.
"Good morning." She accepted it, their fingers brushing briefly. The touch no longer made her flinch. They stood side by side, looking out over the gardens. The silence between them was comfortable now, no longer heavy with unspoken fear.
"I received a letter from Evangeline yesterday," Amalia said. "She wants to visit."
"That is wonderful. Will you see her?"
"Yes. I think I am ready."
She glanced at Franklin. "I have been so isolated for so long. It is strange to think about having friends again, about being a person in the world rather than just existing."
SKN.
"You were always a person, Amalia." Victor tried to erase that, but he failed.
"You are still here." She smiled slightly.
"Some days I believe that more than others.
That is progress."
Franklin set his cup on the balcony railing and turned to face her fully.
"May I ask you something?"
"Of course."
"Are you happy? Here, I mean. Is this place helping you heal? Or does it feel like another cage?"
Amalia considered the question seriously.
"It feels like breathing again, like slowly remembering what it is to want things, to choose things, to simply be without constant fear. So yes, I am not happy yet, but I think I might be learning how to be."
Franklin's expression softened. "That is all I could hope for."
Amalia set her own cup down and took a small step closer to him. Her heart raced, but not entirely from fear this time. There was something else beneath the anxiety, curiosity, longing, the tentative stirring of desire she had thought Victor had killed completely.
"Franklin," she said quietly, "may I try something?" He went very still, recognizing the significance of her asking.
"Anything."
She stepped closer, close enough that she could feel the warmth radiating from him. Then, slowly, giving herself every opportunity to change her mind, she rested her hand against his chest. His heartbeat was steady beneath her palm, strong and alive. She could feel him breathing, could sense the tension in him as he held himself perfectly still, letting her control every moment of this.
"I want to know," she whispered, "what it feels like to choose this, to touch someone because I want to, not because I am expected to."
"And what do you want, Amalia?"
She looked up at him, at the patience in his eyes, at the desire he was holding carefully in check out of respect for her.
"I want to kiss you, but I am afraid."
"Of me?"
"Of myself. Of wanting something and having it hurt me again."
Franklin lifted his hand slowly, telegraphing every movement, and cupped her face with infinite gentleness.
"Then we will go slowly. And if at any moment you want to stop, we stop.
You have complete control here, Amalia.
Always. She nodded, then rose on her toes, closing the distance between them. The kiss was soft and careful, barely a brush of lips. Amalia trembled against him, caught between fear and yearning. Franklin did not deepen the kiss, did not push for more. He simply stood steady, letting her explore at her own pace. When she pulled back, her eyes were wide and shining with unshed tears. "That did not hurt," she whispered, wonder in her voice. Franklin smiled, his thumb brushing across her cheek. "It never should, love, never." She kissed him again, more confident this time, her hands fisting in the fabric of his shirt. "This time," Franklin responded, his lips moving gently against hers, his arms coming up to hold her loosely, giving her room to pull away if she needed. But Amalia did not pull away. She leaned into him, into the warmth and safety and the realization that desire could be tender, that wanting could be mutual, that intimacy did not have to be a battleground. When they finally broke apart, both breathing heavily, Amalia pressed her forehead against his chest. "I think," she said quietly, "I might be falling in love with you, and that terrifies me." Franklin's arms tightened around her slightly, protective rather than possessive. "Why does it terrify you?" "Because loving someone means trusting them with the power to hurt you. And I have been hurt so much already." "Then we will build trust slowly," Franklin said, his voice rough with emotion. "Day by day, choice by choice. Until you know, beyond any doubt, that I will never use your love against you. That I will never cage you or control you or make you less than you are." Amalia looked up at him, searching his face. "And if I need time? If I need to go slowly, even when you want more?" "Then we go slowly. There is no deadline on healing, Amalia. No rush to reach some imagined finish line. I will wait as long as you need." She kissed him again, softer this time, grateful and tentative, and full of fragile hope. "Thank you," she whispered against his lips, "for fighting for me, for seeing me, for making me believe I deserve to be loved." "You do deserve it," Franklin said fiercely. "You deserve everything good this world has to offer. And I intend to spend however long you will let me proving that to you." They stood together on the balcony as the sun climbed higher, wrapped in each other's arms, taking the first careful steps toward something neither of them had expected to find. A love built not on rescue or obligation, but on respect, patience, and the slow, steady work of healing together. 6 months passed. Amalia had not expected healing to be so slow, so nonlinear, so full of setbacks and small victories in equal measure. Some days she woke feeling strong, capable of facing the world. Other days she could barely leave her room, overwhelmed by memories or panic or the simple weight of existing in a body that still remembered pain. But Franklin was there through all of it, steady and patient and utterly undemanding. He taught her to ride horses again, something Victor had forbidden. He brought her books she chose herself, not books deemed appropriate for her. He introduced her to his sister, Regina, who became a fierce friend and ally. He gave her space when she needed it, and presence when she asked for it. And slowly, carefully, their relationship deepened. It was not a fairy tale romance. There were difficult conversations about boundaries and triggers. There were moments when Amalia pulled away, frightened by her own desire or overwhelmed by intimacy. There were nights when Franklin held her while she cried through nightmares, and mornings when she woke expecting Victor beside her, only to find Franklin's concerned face instead. But there were also moments of joy. The first time Amalia laughed freely at something Franklin said, surprised by her own capacity for lightness. The afternoon she beat him at chess and crowed with delight at his mock outrage. The evening she kissed him first, boldly, because she wanted to rather than because he had asked. The night she told him she was ready for more. They were in the library at his estate, a room that had become their favorite place to spend evenings. Franklin was reading while Amalia sketched something she had taken up recently, reclaiming the artistic interests Victor had dismissed as frivolous. She set down her pencil and looked at him, nerves and determination warring in her chest. "Franklin?" He looked up immediately, always attuned to shifts in her mood. "Yes? I have been thinking about something." He set his book aside,
giving her his full attention. Tell me.
Amalia stood and crossed to where he sat, then knelt beside his chair so they were at eye level.
I want to be with you. Truly. Completely. I am ready.
Franklin's expression was careful, searching.
Are you certain?
There is no pressure, Amalia. We can wait as long as...
She pressed her fingers to his lips, silencing him gently.
I know we can wait, but I do not want to anymore. I want to choose this. I want to choose you,
and I want to prove to myself that intimacy can be beautiful instead of terrifying.
Franklin caught her hand, kissing her fingertips softly.
If at any moment you want to stop,
I know.
You have told me 100 times.
You will stop. You will listen. You will never hurt me.
She smiled, though her eyes were bright with unshed tears.
I believe you now, Franklin. That is what has changed. I trust you.
He pulled her into his arms, holding her close.
You have given me a gift I never expected, Amalia.
Your trust. Your heart.
I will treasure both for the rest of my life.
Then show me, she whispered. Show me what it feels like to be loved properly.
Franklin stood, lifting her easily, and carried her from the library to his chambers. He set her down gently beside the bed, then stepped back, giving her space.
At any point.
I know, she said, smiling through her nervousness. I will tell you. I promise.
She reached for the buttons of her dress with trembling fingers.
Franklin watched, desire clear in his eyes, but controlled, patient, letting her set every boundary. When the dress fell away, revealing the scars and marks that Victor had left behind, Amalia instinctively moved to cover herself. But Franklin caught her hands gently.
You are beautiful, he said, his voice rough with emotion.
Every part of you, every scar, every mark, all of it tells the story of your strength.
He kissed her then, deep and slow, pouring 6 months of restrained desire and careful patience into the embrace.
Amalia responded, her hands tangling in his hair, her body pressing against his with growing confidence.
What followed was tender and deliberate, Franklin taking exquisite care to ensure every touch brought pleasure instead of pain, to prove that intimacy could be mutual and safe and achingly sweet. He asked permission before each new caress, listened when she tensed, paused when she needed to breathe through a moment of fear. And Amalia discovered that her body could feel things beyond pain. That desire could build without dread following. That surrendering to sensation did not mean surrendering control. When it was over, she lay in Franklin's arms, overwhelmed by emotion. She cried not from pain or fear, but from relief and release, and the realization that she was truly free now, in every way that mattered. Franklin held her through it, murmuring reassurances, stroking her hair, giving her the space to feel everything without judgment.
Thank you, she finally whispered.
For what?
For showing me what this should be.
For giving me back something I thought Victor had destroyed forever.
Franklin kissed her forehead softly.
You gave that to yourself, Amalia. I just had the honor of being here when you reclaimed it.
Spring arrived, bringing warmth and new growth to the estate gardens.
Amalia stood in those gardens one bright morning, planting flowers she had chosen herself. Her hands were dirty, her dress practical, her hair pulled back simply. She looked nothing like the refined society Lady Victor had tried to create. She looked like herself. Franklin approached from the house, carrying lemonade and smiling at the sight of her kneeling in the dirt with utter contentment.
You are going to ruin that dress, he observed.
I do not care. It is my dress to ruin. He laughed and settled onto the bench nearby, watching her work.
I received a letter from London this morning. There is a social event next month. We have been invited.
Amalia glanced up, uncertainty flickering across her face.
Do you want to go?
Only if you do. We can decline if you prefer privacy.
She sat back on her heels, considering.
6 months ago, the thought of facing society would have terrified her. But now, with Franklin beside her, with her own strength reclaimed and her voice returned, the idea was less frightening.
I think I would like to go, she said slowly.
I think I would like to walk into a room with you and show everyone that I am still here, that I survived, that I am more than what Victor tried to make me. Franklin's expression was fierce with pride. Then we will go, together. Amalia stood, brushing dirt from her hands, and crossed to him. She had grown bolder in her affection over the months, more comfortable initiating touch and closeness. She settled onto his lap without hesitation, curling against his chest.
Franklin?
Hmm?
If I asked you to marry me, what would you say? He went still, his arms tightening around her. Is that a hypothetical question, or are you actually asking?
I am asking. She looked up at him, her expression serious. But not because I feel obligated or because society expects it, or because I need your protection. I am asking because I love you, because I want to choose this partnership freely, because you have shown me what marriage could be when it is built on respect instead of control.
Franklin cupped her face in his hands, his eyes bright.
Then my answer is yes, yes, with every part of my being. But only if you are absolutely certain, Amalia.
I need to know you are choosing this for yourself, not for any other reason.
I am certain, she said firmly. I have spent 6 years in a marriage that was a prison. I know the difference between captivity and choice. This is choice. You are my choice.
Franklin kissed her then, deep and thorough, pouring every ounce of love and devotion he possessed into the embrace. When they finally broke apart, both were breathless and laughing.
We should do this properly, Franklin said. Let me ask you. Let me do this the way you deserve.
He shifted, setting her on the bench and dropping to one knee before her in the garden. He took her hands in his, dirt and all, and looked up at her with absolute sincerity.
Amalia Foster, you are the bravest person I have ever known. You survived hell and came out stronger. You reclaimed your voice when the world tried to silence you. You taught me that justice and law are not always the same thing, and that loving someone means giving them freedom rather than chains. Would you do me the extraordinary honor of becoming my wife?
Amalia smiled through tears, her heart so full she thought it might burst.
Yes, 1,000 times yes.
Franklin stood and pulled her into his arms, spinning her around as she laughed with pure joy. When he set her down, they were both grinning like fools, overwhelmed by the moment and the future stretching before them.
When should we marry? Franklin asked.
Soon, Amalia said. I do not want a long engagement. I do not want to wait any longer to start our life together properly.
Then we will marry within the month.
Small ceremony, close friends, nothing ostentatious.
Perfect, she kissed him softly. I do not need grand gestures, Franklin. I just need you.
4 weeks later, Amalia walked down the aisle of a small country church, wearing a simple ivory dress and carrying wildflowers she had picked that morning. The guest list was intimate. Regina and her husband, Evangeline and Cecilia, Dr. Helena Cross, a handful of Franklin's closest friends and family members who had proven themselves worthy of witnessing this moment. Notably absent were Amalia's mother and Lady Rosemary, neither of whom had been invited. Amalia had written her mother a letter explaining her decision to marry Franklin, but she had not asked for her blessing or her presence. She did not need permission from people who had failed to protect her. Franklin waited at the altar, looking at her with such open adoration that Amalia's breath caught. This was so different from her first wedding. That ceremony had been grand and public, full of people who did not know her and did not care to. This was small and meaningful, surrounded by people who had fought for her or stood by her or helped her heal. When she reached Franklin, he took her hands and whispered, "You are stunning."
"I am happy," she whispered back.
"Truly happy." The ceremony was brief and heartfelt. They exchanged vows they had written themselves promises, not of obedience and duty, but of partnership and respect, and love freely given. When the vicar pronounced them married, Franklin kissed her with gentle passion, and Amalia kissed him back without fear or hesitation, claiming this moment as holy, completely hers. At the small reception afterward, Evangeline embraced Amalia tightly.
"I am so glad you found happiness," she said, tears in her eyes.
"You deserve this."
"I know," Amalia replied, and meant it.
For the first time in her life, she truly believed she deserved good things. That night, as she and Franklin prepared to leave for a wedding trip to the coast, Amalia stood on the balcony of the estate one last time, looking out over gardens that had witnessed her transformation from victim to survivor, to someone strong enough to love again. Franklin came up behind her, wrapping his arms around her waist and resting his chin on her shoulder. "Regrets?" he asked softly. "None." She turned in his arms to face him. "I regret nothing that led me to you. Not even the pain? The pain shaped me. Victor tried to break me, but instead he made me strong enough to recognize real love when it appeared. So no, I do not regret it. I survived it. And now I get to live beyond it." Franklin kissed her forehead. "Where would you like to go? The coast? The countryside? Anywhere you want." Amalia smiled, leaning into him. "Anywhere is perfect, as long as I am choosing it myself." They stood together in the gathering darkness, two people who had found each other in the aftermath of trauma and built something beautiful from the wreckage. Not a rescue, not a salvation, but a partnership between equals, built on trust and respect and the fierce, tender courage of healing together. Duke Franklin Wells had arrived at Blackthorn Hall to sentence a woman for murder. Instead, he had given her something far more valuable: the freedom to choose her own life, the safety to love without fear, and the certainty that she was worth fighting for. And Amalia Foster, survivor, warrior, woman reclaimed, had chosen to build that life beside him, not because she needed saving, but because she was finally, gloriously free to want. If this story resonated with you, please like, subscribe, and share your thoughts in the comments below. Which moment struck you hardest, Amalia's courtroom testimony, Franklin's fierce protection, or their slow journey toward love? Let me know what you think, and I'll see you in the next story.